Good day to you, and welcome to Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium, a podcast for fiber artists and producers. I am your host, Madeline Rosenberg, here with you on a very icy, chilly February day. Nothing has been normal around here for the past month. We were gone for 10 days in Florida and the Bahamas. We came back, and I had the flu, and then Alex got the flu. I had to go to a convention, and I came back, and Alex got the flu again, and I still have a horrendous cough that is not responding to medication. So yeah, time does not exist. I had a whole podcast recorded already, and I went to edit it, and I lost the file because my laptop is on its last legs. So I have to redo everything, but that's okay. You're going to get to hear a different perspective than you would have before. First off, I want to say thank you to everybody who's supporting the podcast. It's amazing to see the number of subscribers jump up day by day. I posted a map recently of where all of you are. We have listeners in India and Turkey and Spain and the UK, all of North America. So excited to have you. So excited to see us building this community. And to see the reach that this is having, that's really encouraging. If you have not already done so, go to your favorite podcast provider, iTunes, Podcast Republic, Podbean, whatever it may be, however you access and listen, please consider going and leaving a review. It doesn't take too long. It does help the podcast. I do try and read reviews where I can find them. I love hearing from you. And if you have comments, questions, or suggestions, please submit them on our website, ballyhoofiberemporium.com/podcast. You can find show notes and links and much more. You can find us on Instagram, ballyhoo.fiber.emporium, on Facebook, facebook.com/ballyhoofarm. Let me know if you would like to have giveaways come back. I had a subscriber who asked about that. I am happy to source things to give away from our lovely artists if you would like to have the opportunity to get them. So let me know. Do you want them back? Do you not want to do giveaways? What would make it easier for you to participate in giveaways? Let me know. By the way, I also know that my name is incorrect on the podcast when it shows up in iTunes, etc. I have tried mightily to get that changed, and I'm unable to do so for reasons that I addressed on the Patreon. I don't know, at least you guys know who I am, so I'm not going to worry about it too much. Farm shares are open for 2018. If you are in the Central Kentucky area and you are interested in having grass-fed lamb, free-range eggs, or produce from our garden this year, you can go to ballyhoofiberemporium.com/farmshares with an S and check out what we have to offer. You know what sucks? Mondays. But you know what makes Mondays better? This podcast! And you can get even more exclusive content by going to patreon.com/ballyhoofiberemporium, including the opportunity to download our theme song as a ringtone. The voices of Cappuccino, Pearl, Cinnabon, and a few other sheep. Pop on over and grab that. There's also video from my trip to San Antonio, which is what we'll be talking about today. The trip, not the video. But you can access that and a lot of other stuff as well. Additionally, this is the first year that I will be performing live at fiber festivals. So if you've got a knitting event or a fiber convention of some sort near you and you would like to have me there, reach out and let me know. I would love to put your event on the air and celebrate what makes your fiber community unique. All right, a recap of my trip to the American Sheep Industry Convention. I took so many notes, you guys. So many notes. It was my first time attending, and it was also my very first time being a state delegate, really, to anything. It was a whirlwind, definitely, because I'm poor The first day was a 20-hour day. The second day was like an 18-hour day. And then the third day, oh my gosh. Yeah, let's see. I flew out before the crack of dawn because as I was sitting on the plane, it was dark outside and you could see the moon and I took some pictures. It was super pretty. And then all of a sudden there was a flash and it was daylight. That's how fast the sun comes up when you're in the friendly skies. I got into San Antonio at about 11 a.m. and I went directly to the convention site. I stayed at a hotel a couple blocks away and saved like way over $200 a night. Score. I got there in between things because, again, it was my first time and I was kind of super shy. I went by myself. I didn't want to just like march into a meeting super late and be like, I'm here. I decided to get some lunch because, again, I knew I wasn't going to get out of meetings until 10 o'clock that night. And I didn't know what kind of, you know, what the food sitch was going to be like. So I went across the street to Denny's, always reliable. Got myself some pancakes, only they were in some kind of kitchen crisis and they were running so far behind that I wound up being late for the next meeting. So I sat and made myself a schedule and I listed out everywhere I needed to be and everything I needed to do for the next 3 days. I determined that that time from me being late until the next meeting was going to be the only time I'd have for sightseeing. So I decided to visit the Alamo. The Alamo was described to me as underwhelming, and it is remarkably tiny. The grounds are now a lovely garden. It's a very peaceful, reflective spot. Beautiful, beautiful trees. Lots of texture in the landscape, which you can see in the video that I made. Just a really nice spot. But the actual building, one, I didn't know was a church. I know some of you out there are probably like, duh. Education is everything, right? So I got my learn on, and it's crumbling because it's old. It has had a ton of uses in its lifetime. Going to the Alamo is free. I highly recommend it. You can't take photos inside, but you can walk through and see things and learn for free. And then, of course, make a donation, please, to help save this historic site. The mission that is around the church was a lot bigger. There were army barracks and some kind of like a trading post or something, or maybe just storage for the army. I forget. There's part of the original aquifer that watered the mission, and there's fish in there, and they're enormous and friendly. There's still part of the area where the women and children lived, and one of the stones from the mill where they ground their own flour. It was a really cool experience. Beautiful day, 75 degrees, sunny, blue skies, San Antonio at its finest. Definitely a welcome change from 12 degrees back here in Kentucky. I felt really bad when I called Alex to check on everything and he was like, yeah, I had to break ice on the water buckets. Like, oh, I'm wearing short sleeves. Sorry about you. So then I did start going to meetings. Because I have social anxiety and imposter syndrome, I made sure that I took a drop spindle with me and a bunch of Tim's lovely Shetland wool. I knew I was going to be different at the ASI women's meeting, which I'll talk about later. There were only 16 women in attendance, and I skewed the average age by like 30 years. I mean, fiber is a woman-driven industry, and if you want to have a voice, there is plenty of opportunity for you to do so. I recommend getting in touch with your state association if you have one and just join and work your way up. It doesn't take very much. They need new blood. Everybody needs new blood and new ideas. ASI seems like they are very interested in hearing what you have to say. In fact, the first night I was at a reception and I said, you know, I really don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. And the people that I was talking to said, well, you just attend the meetings, and if you have something to say, you stand up and say it. And I did, and I feel like I was heard and well-received. I'm different, not just because I'm young and a woman, but because I have wool sheep that are not Rambouillet or Merino, because I don't have a large commercial flock, and because I niche and direct market. That's unusual on a national level. And they need more input from us, and they need to hear our needs and our voices. Again, reach out to your state association, sign up, because most state associations include your ASI membership, and the American sheep industry is working for you whether you know it or not. As you know, if you raise small ruminants of any kind, most of the drugs that we use are off-label, and under the Veterinary Feed Directive, obviously that's illegal. But ASI has made it possible for us to have loopholes that allow us to treat our animals and keep them healthy. The keynote speaker was a trifecta, one part lawyer, one part marketer, and one part spin doctor. He spoke to us about combating the negative messages that are associated with our industry. Really, he focused on two voices. One is PETA and the other is the Humane Society of the United States. Neither of these groups are favorable. Neither of them are positive. Neither of them are in it for their publicly assumed purpose. They're in it for financial gain and really to wreak havoc. PETA is actually listed with the FBI as a terrorist organization. That's not how you want to be known. He was talking about how to get out ahead of these negative messages. You know, first it was meat, then it was shearing. You know, what's going to be next? How are they going to try to take away our industry and turn consumers against us? Shearing is not murder. Shearing shouldn't be harmful to an animal. In fact, Alex sent me a video the other day of this old guy that was shearing on a front porch somewhere. And he was like, am I missing something or is this just wrong? The guy had goat tied the sheep before he ever started shearing. He didn't use the standard pattern, but he did shear to a pattern. And at first I was like, what on earth? But then I started looking and it was an older gentleman working by himself on a 300-pound sheep, bordered by two roads, no pen, open space. And I thought, well, you know, better to have three legs tied up and not have that sheep get away than, you know, lose it and cause a car accident. There was nothing inherently inhumane, but it wasn't pretty. It definitely wasn't ideal. But you know, the nonsense that you hear all the time about, oh, shearers don't care and they cut off tails and they cut off ears. That's not industry standard. That's not what we condone or support, and definitely not how anybody there tries to do it. But my takeaway from that meeting was how I can use those same tactics to promote my wool business. Really, by going and keeping an open mind, I learned so, so much that I'm hopefully going to be able to apply through the coming year to my own operation. The next meeting that I attended was the Young Entrepreneurs, and that's where I first met Roy Kettlewell. Roy Kettlewell is a chemist, and for the past over 20 years, he has worked specifically with wool. So he's the man to ask if you want to know why fiber takes dye a certain way or what the characteristics of this versus that are. He knows everything right down to like the molecular level. It's amazing to listen to him. He's from the UK. He currently resides in Sydney and he works for the American sheep industry. I had the presence of mind to record him twice throughout the convention. I will post audio to the podcast, so that'll be available to you. There will be a slideshow with the longer presentation that will be available on the Patreon to Ballyhooligans who subscribe. I hope to have that out in the next week. Whether you are a podcast subscriber, a Patreon subscriber, or both, you should be getting notifications when something new pops up. Let me know if that's working too. See, I need so much feedback. So I drop spindled all through the keynote speaker. People came up and took pictures and asked about that. I handed out so many business cards. At one point, I thought I was going to run out. It was just card, 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 card. Every person I talked to, I was handing them business cards. I've never been to something with that much networking before. Then I spun, you know, just walking around and whatnot. And then in the Young Entrepreneurs meeting, of all the people in the room, I was fetching the highest price for my wool. I had the most variety. There were only two producers, of which I was one, that raised Shetlands or natural colored sheep. And I think there might have been one other person who was interested in or owned a mill. Most of the attendees are from Western states with broad swaths of land, whether they're public grazing or private. And they just have a really different experience than we do east of the Mississippi, definitely, maybe east of the Rockies. Merino is the order of the day. Rambouillet. Texel is really coming up. Not much otherwise. So the speakers in this meeting, there were two giant fiber manufacturers, textile and felt hats, in Texas that were speaking, and then Roy Kettlewell as well. The biggest takeaway was that they want to purchase American wool, but in order to strike a deal with somebody, they really need 40 to 50,000 pounds. On a single producer level, this seems impossible, right? Nobody can get that much. But on a state level, again, I urge you to work with your state associations, with your breed associations. Try and strike a deal with people in your area, you know, band together, find out what you're going to get at the wool pool for a price, and then find out if you can get enough that you can sell it yourselves. They want it. They'll take it. And make sure that you skirt your fleeces. Run around them once and pull the dung tags off at least. 80% of the environmental impact of a garment is in the life of that garment. So we think about sustainability and being eco-friendly, and everybody thinks, oh, cotton, right? Because you grow it and you can not so big of a footprint and whatever. Cotton actually takes a ton of water and it needs a lot of washing. Also holds odor. We need to wash our clothes a lot, and that's where this 80% comes in. Your environmental impact is not so much in the making of the clothing, it's in the washing and tumble drying, and the electricity and water and other resources that that takes, the chemicals that you're using to wash it, etc. The less you can wash your clothes, the better, and wool allows us to do that, and I'll let Roy tell you about that later in other posts. I'll let him be the expert in that subject matter instead of it passing through me. Did you know that the California State Motorcycle Troopers wear 100% wool elastane pants 365 days a year because they are the most comfortable, durable, weather-resistant textiles that they can find? So that night, there was a reception, and again, social anxiety, right? I went in, got my food, wandered around shyly until somebody offered me an empty seat. At conventions, seats are a premium. If you get one, you don't leave it. I learned that pretty quick. I only talked to a few couples because, again, social anxiety, and the room was so loud, and I have this horrible cough, so I was sucking down vitamin C drops the whole time, trying not to cough or interrupt anybody. But everyone was very, very nice, and people talked all week about how going to the convention is like visiting family, and I can really see that to be the case. I understand that there are some rifts, particularly between East and West, and I don't really understand that because all our goals are the same, to raise better, happier, more productive sheep, and to get a fair price for our products, wool and meat. I'm not sure how this... you're in the East, you don't understand us mentality and vice versa developed, but it needs to go away. The next morning, I went to the ASI women's meeting, and we had a really good speaker. Roy Kettlewell spoke again. In addition, we had Emily Buck from The Ohio State University. She teaches marketing and has a small wool flock of her own. I spun through that meeting as well and attracted a lot of attention. It's amazing, at a sheep convention, there were no knitters. I mean, there were knitters in attendance, but nobody had knitting and no one else had a drop spindle. In fact, most people didn't know what it was. Emily spoke about the importance of giving an accurate picture about what sheep production is like. Women are the primary consumer base because they make decisions on behalf of their whole family. And so that's where our focus needs to be, is not convincing men, but changing women's minds. why they should buy wool clothing, why they should cook with lamb. And lamb, of course, comes with the connotation of little tiny fuzzy baby spring lambs. And that's not what we're eating. We're eating sexually mature individuals. I spoke up and said, if anybody's ever seen the destruction that a ram can cause, that tends to change people's minds pretty quickly. And these animals have had good lives. It's not like we ripped them from their mother's side and took them off to slaughter. You know, they're independent. They've experienced as complete a life as a non-breeding ram can have. Yes, and they provide a healthy source of protein for those of us who choose to eat meat. We as women are predisposed to worry about what other people think, and that causes us to value things and think in certain ways that may not always be accurate. And I think that a lot of women these days, especially women in business and those in agriculture, only 20% of the women in that room were not old white men. I think a lot of us are coming to the realization that we act that way and that it needs to change. We need to be more confident in ourselves and our decision-making abilities and trust our own value systems instead of trying to stay in line with what we perceive someone else to want. That said, people don't change their minds in a second. They change their minds through mulling it over, being confronted with messages that counter what they think they know. And so really, when you change somebody's mind, you're changing their whole world. And this is where education comes in. And it can be as simple as participating in social media. You can't excuse yourself by just saying, oh, well, I don't do Facebook or I don't do Instagram. You can take pictures on your phone. You know how to do that. You can save them and post them at a later date when someone can help you. For a lot of these women, that comes down to having a grandchild who's very familiar with social media and having them do it for you. Being inundated with information that comes straight from the source, straight from the ranch, straight from the barn, and especially by other women, again, we're in a woman-driven industry, is really critical to countering these negative messages that people receive from PETA, from uninformed sources. 90% of the population actually doesn't ever come into contact with a farm animal. So they don't know. They just don't know. And it's up to us to tell them and show them. Showing is more powerful than telling. And experience is even more powerful than that. So don't be afraid to go to events and open your farm and invite people in. Apparently that's becoming a really common tactic with mommy bloggers because they, again, have such pull and such reach. Farms are inviting bloggers to come there and experience things like shearing day for themselves or weaning or lambing or anything. And then they in turn can go share that experience with their followers. So consider that in your area, have a school trip out. In fact, why don't you post and on the show notes this week and tell me what you do to make your farm more accessible to people and to help them understand what it is that we do. We had the congressman from the 23rd District of Texas, Senator Will Hurd, who's a young man whose claim to fame was being a spy for the CIA before he decided to get into politics. And he seems like a very nice young man, and I wish him well. Then we had a really interesting speaker. Basically, he's worked in the grocery industry since he was a teenager, and his area of focus is meat. So again, this was another area where my primary focus is wool, not meat. We do sell some lamb. My area is not exactly the same. And in some cases, people would have just dismissed the speaker like, that's very interesting, but it doesn't apply to me. Instead, I tried to take those concepts that he was sharing and the information that he was giving and translate that into my wool business. How can I extrapolate this same formula and make my yarn and wool sales more successful? I find the more informed I am, the angrier I am, as was the case here with the grocery industry. Did you know that you are rated as a customer based on the amount that you spend and the size of your basket? It's true. You're rated on a scale from 1 to 10. The people who buy lamb at the grocery store are considered the 8 to 10 category. They are interested in specialty items, locally grown, organic, chef-made, artisanal, those who drink red wine, those who drink scotch, and lamb in total accounts for less than 1% of meat sales, which kind of sucks. You know, 50% of meat sales is ground beef. Why not ground lamb? I know, because it's more expensive, right? But it's better meat. And if you remember back to the Mary Berry interview, we need to be eating less meat but better quality. Also, the reason that you go to Kroger or Safeway or Albertsons or whatever it is you go to and you never see the same people twice is that there's 112% turnover in the grocery industry and even 70% turnover in the meat industry. So none of these people are staying in jobs. And on a cashier level, that makes sense, right? Because they're high school kids or college kids doing a part-time gig until they go to school or get out of school. But overall, that means that your people aren't even getting trained properly before they're gone. In my opinion, at least, how can you trust them to tell you what you should or shouldn't eat? Go find a farmer. We have lamb shares this year. We won't have a lot of them, but we're selling quarter and half lambs. I think that makes it a little more accessible for people who want to add lamb to their diet or maybe just try it out. We also sell by the cut. There are lots of farmers who do that, but we need to get consumers more interested in lamb. There was another speaker that said 39% of Americans say they don't like lamb and have never tried it. If you don't try it, how do you know you don't like it? Also, if you don't like it, go try lamb from the farm, because as I understand it, we like our lamb. Most of the distaste comes from the fat. Feedlot lambs, which are the ones that you're getting at the grocery store, are a lot fattier than farm fresh grass-fed lambs. You're going to be happier overall with the food that you get direct from the farm. And no matter where you live, you can find a CSA or a rancher or a lamb share or something. Then Roy Kettlewell spoke again, and that's the presentation that I'll share with you on the Patreon. There are some samples of clothing that I'd like to show you, etc. Then I went on an adventure. When you've got 3 days in Texas, you want to make the most of it, right? Fortunately, one of the delegates' wives got to do all of the fun sightseeing spouse stuff that I didn't get to go to because I was a delegate. And it was from her that I learned a bunch of really cool stuff that was going on, like an art night projection show thing that was happening on a cathedral in the market square about halfway in between my hotel and the convention center. When we were there, I ended up standing next to them, and then she let me in on a parade that was happening the next day for the stock show and rodeo. And so one of the really cool things that I got to see before I left Texas was 110 head of Longhorn cattle walk down the street. And then there was the Texas equivalent of Zeke, this border collie that just very clearly had his own agenda as far as the parade was concerned, and somebody else could handle herding the actual sheep and goats. Thank you very much. My name is Jack. But I decided that I wanted good old-fashioned Texas barbecue, and I looked up a place that the locals like, not a touristy spot, and I walked there. It was a couple miles. It's a really pretty city. The Riverwalk is really nice. There's a lot of art. I really like the Western Art Museum. They have some awesome sculptures that just blew my mind. I don't understand working with bronze. To think up something on so large a scale with such minute detail and be able to make that happen through, I guess, casting in a mold. I'm not super familiar with the metalworking process, but it's just incredible. And I'm in awe of people who do that on such a high level. Again, great weather, a little bit overcast. Figured I would walk down to the B&D Ice House before it got dark. The food was outstanding. I have never eaten brisket so thick. Macaroni and cheese was really good. Oh, so the first night at the reception, they had these tiny desserts that were delicious, and they had lamb fajitas and what I thought was chili. It was a Frito pie. For those of you not from Texas, this, I guess, is some kind of layered dish that I really need to learn more about. With my OCD, I could not bring myself to mix everything together. So they had these little snack packs of Fritos. You were supposed to pour all of your toppings and things into the bag of chips. No. Mm-mm. So I put the chili on a plate, and there was also sour cream and cheese and I think green onions and pickled jalapenos, which were amazing. Put my Fritos on top. So sorry, Texans, I screwed up. But there wasn't a sign. There wasn't a sign that said Frito pie. It wasn't in a pie form. I was unaware that this was how it's meant to be eaten. So again, I need to do some more research and create this dish at home. All that to say that when I went for barbecue, I saw on the sign pickled jalapenos and thought, oh, yes, please. I got those. There were carrots and onions also with the jalapenos, which were whole. It was nothing like at the convention. The carrots were so hot, they lit my mouth on fire. The amount of pepper in the pepper, it filled my orifice with a radiant heat that could have possibly kept my home warm on a cold winter's night and left me breathing fire. But it was good flavor. There was so much food that I took a bunch back to my hotel and had barbecue brisket the next morning for breakfast, because that's how we roll. I asked Google Maps how to walk back to the hotel. Google Maps was like, you know what? Why don't you walk through this guy's house? And oh, this is a neighborhood you haven't seen. It's dark. Don't care. It was supposed to be a 12-minute walk back to my room. And after 40 minutes, I gave up and asked two nice policemen. At that point, I was only two blocks from my hotel. Thank God. So I schlepped and soaked my giant blisters. The other thing that I did that night, though, was walk down to the oldest cathedral. It was built just after the unpleasantness at the Alamo. It sits on the market square. There are only, as I understand it, three or four of these market squares left in any American towns. San Antonio is fortunate to have the only market square that still has a church standing on one of its sides. There's also a courthouse, which is the original Briscoe County courthouse, and it's gorgeous, made from red brick. That lines another side of the square. So again, walked a couple blocks at dark. I was a little nervous about it. I had Lori on video chat just in case. It was only a couple blocks. So I get to this stoplight, and there's this old guy wearing a jacket, muttering to himself. He looks at me, and I see that his hat has something or other pianos on it. Well, the one thing that I always thought growing up, and maybe I'm misinformed, and murderers own pianos. When I was a kid, I thought that if you walked to a house and there was a piano in the living room, especially prominently, that you could trust those people to knock on their door. Don't laugh at me. Growing up as a musician, that's what I thought. You could always trust somebody who had a piano in their front window. I immediately harked back to my childhood and said, oh, are you a tuner? And the old man looked at me and said, oh, why, yes, I am. And he said, I'm here for a concert at the cathedral. I said, well, I'm walking to the cathedral right now. Would you like to walk together? And he said, no, I've been to the cathedral. I'm looking for my car. And I said, but the show is just about to start. At the cathedral, when I was walking past with my barbecue, there was a two-piano concert, and they played works by Liszt and other things that were not very well known. I would have liked to attend that, actually, which is a huge step in the right direction for me, if you've been following my personal journey. It was kind of a big deal that I even expressed interest in this man and told him that I used to be a pianist. We talked about music and pianos, transportation in large cities, etc. He walked with me a couple of blocks because I mapped where his car should have been. And I hope he found it, because I turned right and he turned left. And I went to this light show, which you can also see in the video on Patreon. The city had a French artist come in and design this projection. This is the 300th birthday of San Antonio. And so this light show, projection show with music, shows the history of the city. And it's projected on this very, very old cathedral. So the cathedral was hopping that night, first with the piano concert and then with this free light show that's open to the public. Beautiful. Loved it. Highly recommend. If you're in San Antonio on a Tuesday, Thursday, or Friday, you should go. Again, it's free. There's three shows a night. And it just starts. Like, you're standing in this beautiful square, and then all of a sudden the lights get cut. The cathedral starts to change, and it's really beautiful. You can watch most of that show on the video that I posted on Patreon. So the final day, I woke up. We had our regional caucus meetings. Those were smaller breakout groups of, depending on your region, like 7 or 8 states. And the delegates all met to talk about things that were specific to their area. If you are just a regular person who does not raise sheep, you might consider helping us out by asking your representative to vote to keep the USDA sheep station running. This is a critical, critical partner to our industry. They do partner with the University of Idaho, but they are not part of the university. That's where the Polypay breed was developed. They're down to one researcher, and he can't do his job because he's so bogged down with administrative work that he can't research anything. And there's been, for a number of years now, as I understand it, a hiring freeze that is unit-specific. So the government keeps trying to excise this from the budget because they don't believe that it's of benefit. And it is. It's critical to our industry. In fact, the impact that the research there has had has been invaluable to producers in the States, and probably worldwide, because that research is, of course, available to all. So if you like sheep, please help us keep the station by asking your representative to lift the hiring freeze so that poor Brett can get some help out there and maybe go back to doing his job, research. They have money, they just can't hire anybody. And that kind of sucks. You may be interested to know that out west, where they graze on public land, they are down to 2% of the allotments that were formerly available. You hear a lot about wildlife and how sheep are changing the terrain, having a negative impact. But in fact, there's quite a lot of work that goes into keeping domestic sheep separated from bighorns and, of course, minimizing interactions between predators and domestic sheep. You also hear about conflicts that happen when the flocks are moving through public lands that are also available to recreational users who may not be familiar with livestock or livestock guardian dogs. And sometimes there are negative consequences when they meet. And it's always against the farmer. Did you know that sheep, the sheep ganglion, in fact, is poised to save people from Huntington's, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and other neurological issues? And we can still eat the meat from those sheep. I'm not really familiar with it. I mean, I've heard bits here and there about what's happening, that they were studying the sheep and making some progress and whatever. And I guess now they're in human trials. They have to kill the sheep in order to take the piece of the brain that they need to treat these diseases that are, I mean, it's going to be revolutionary. It's going to save so many lives and so much heartbreak. If you've ever known anybody who's had Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or Huntington's, I imagine so much pain and suffering can be mitigated by these little sheep. And that's amazing. But it would be a shame, obviously, if we could only use this one little part of the animal and then the rest of it was unusable. Because, of course, if you're familiar with my life at all, we try very hard to use every part of something. Plus, it's going to revolutionize the sheep production side of things, because suddenly these sheep are going to be in really high demand on two fronts. And for something entirely new that you can feel great about saving lives. What they're studying is a brain fat called GM1. And I'm going to try and find someone who can speak to us about these transgenic sheep and the cure for Huntington's. That's some really big news for a lot of folks. Did you know that China imports 60% of the raw wool demand in this country and 80% of Australian wool? here's a sad thing about the world. It is cheaper for these giant mills that spoke to the young entrepreneurs in Texas to buy raw wool, even from American producers, send it to China, have it carbonized, which breaks up all of the vegetable matter so it just falls right out as ash, and scoured and sent back, than it is to open their own scouring machines, which at least one of those places has on site. You know why? Environmental regulations. So China, India, most of Asia, and I believe Africa don't have the same environmental regulations that we do, not even close. They don't care about the impact on the land or the people. You can send it there for pennies because there's no making up for poisoned rivers. But China is beginning to change, so they're going to have to look for somewhere else to send it. I would prefer to pay a little higher price and have them keep it here and not poison anywhere in the world. But we know that won't happen. Then we had a luncheon with a speaker who talked about the Veterinary Feed Directive and minor species use. Then we went back to meetings and learned about different farm insurances. And I can talk a little bit about those if there's a demand. So let me know if you want to hear about these issues. I may speak about the Veterinary Feed Directive separately as a producer resource. And then we had our important voting meeting. So what we're there to do is represent as many states as possible, so everyone has a fair say in creating resolutions and making demands for the farm bill, and so that we in agriculture, and specifically in the sheep industry, are able to keep our property and raise sheep in the manner that is healthy and eco-friendly without government interference or prevention. We voted on a number of resolutions, and I'm going to run through them just real quick here. I mentioned that even if you are not a member of ASI, they are working for you. So I want you to think about that when you listen to this list of resolutions. This is just the ones that we voted on this year. They do this every year. And again, you can have a voice. That a convention next year will be in New Orleans in January. But I just want to point out that these are all topics that affect all of us every day, whether you're a producer or not, more so if you are. And they affect the world around you environmentally and politically. If you have the opportunity to have a say, why would you not? Join your state association. That will get you membership into ASI. If you are not happy or you don't have a state association, just join ASI as a producer. Contribute to the conversation. So these are the resolutions on which we voted. I'm just running through the titles. Exemption from federal unemployment tax for farm workers, Animal Damage Control Act, Animal Unit Management, Clean Water Act and Water Rights, Drug Approval Process, Corporate Average Fuel Economy, Dye-Resistant Fibers, Environmental Stewardship, Environmental Treaties, Export Enhancement Programs, Farm Licensed Vehicle Exemptions, Federal Grazing Fees, Federal Tax Policy, Free Trade Agreements, Office Closures for the FSA, Grazing Preference, H-2A Program, Management and Delisting of Wolf Populations, Management of National Grasslands, Mutton Promotion, Predator Management Methods, Private Land Acquisition, Protections of State Sovereignty and Individual Property Rights, Public Lands Council, Quality Assurance, Regulatory Impact, Screw Worms, Second Amendment Rights, Seed Stock Export Import Programs, Wolf Dog Hybrids, Community Coalitions, DOT Regs, Endangered Species Act, Rangeland Monitoring, Scrapie Research, Section 179 Deduction, Voluntary Tech Assistance and National Grazing Lands, and Wildlife Services. There's a lot in there, right? There was a lot to think about and vote on, and there were only two with which I personally didn't agree. But because I was representing the state of Kentucky, I felt there was no more I could do than abstain. Those two things were the delisting of wolf populations and the M44s. M44s, if you're not familiar, and honestly I wasn't before this meeting, are cyanide devices that are planted to control predator populations. The problem is they're not fail-safe. They also kill dogs who are wandering through, and probably other wildlife as well. I guess they're like bait stations that are, it shoots the animal with cyanide when they bite it, and it kills them. They are not currently in use or available for use because some people sued after losing their beloved dogs. ASI is in support of fatal methods of predator control across the board, regardless of the situation, above and beyond any method of non-lethal control. I wasn't in all of the Education and Wildlife and Resource Council meetings. I wish I could have gone. There were way too many things that were double booked, or, you know, attending the Wool Council, which is very relevant to my operation, or attending the Resource Council, which is not as critical. It may be that I need somebody to go with me to take notes in other meetings. It may be that I need to make choices from year to year, which things I go to and which things I don't. I'm definitely going to try to add an extra day next year so that I'm not as rushed. I have a meeting this week with our state association director, and I'm really excited to talk to her about ways to increase our membership and increase our voice in the industry and support producers. It was an awesome experience. Again, you don't have to be a producer in order to attend this convention and network and see what it's about. You can just go. There was a group of knitters that went in Colorado 2 years ago, and they reported back, I think it was on a podcast and also on a blog, I saw it somewhere, jam-packed with information and really nice people. They're talking about going back to San Antonio. It's a really neat city. There's a lot more I wish I could have seen. I can't wait to go back to Texas and spend more time there. Hopefully make a stop in Houston so I can meet Terry in person, because that still hasn't happened. Speaking of Houston and Terry, he is getting ready to re-release his bags. He's got some Naked Man bags. He's got some Avenger bags. There's good things happening, people. Go to Etsy, Bags by Terry. Make sure that you bookmark his shop so that you get alerted, because you need to snatch one of those suckers up as soon as they drop. Stuff here on the farm is good. We have 4 or 5 shearing clients that are already on the books. If you need me to shear your sheep, you need to contact me as soon as possible, because I will be traveling more this year. I'm expanding my festival schedule. We're going to start showing sheep as well. I'm excited and also very nervous and embarrassed in advance because I don't know what I'm doing. Also, my parents will be moving here in a couple of months, and so I will be helping them. To wit, I will be making a cross-country trip from Oregon to Kentucky. If you have a suggestion of somewhere I should stop, if you want me to come see you, if you want to be on the podcast or know somebody who should be, I will be crossing the nation, and I am more than happy to stop at your location and spend some time with you, with or without a microphone. If you are looking for livestock or want me to transport livestock for you, that can be arranged. On our own farm, it's a mud pit. Winter can't make up its mind this year. My dad says global warming is a myth. It is definitely not. We have these stupid ice storms, and then everything turns to mush, and then it gets icy again, and then mush again. At this point, I'm not convinced we're going to have any grass come up at all, but it's not too late to reseed. I did, however, note that grass seed has gone up by $20 a bag for 50 pounds this year, and that's just plain fescue. I haven't even priced out Timothy and alfalfa and orchard grass. Good grass grows good fiber. You gotta start with a good base. 2 of our ewes will be leaving us this week, and we're getting peacocks. I missed having peacocks. I don't know if you remember what happened with our last peafowl, but it was very sad. And my Sebastopol geese almost make up for them, but not quite. There's nothing like having a letter from the mother of a 5-year-old girl that says how elated they were to get the tail feathers to put in her Halloween costume. Guys, I can't even tell you. This year we will have peacock feathers again to share with you. Sustainably harvested. No birds harmed in the making of these beautiful, beautiful eye feathers. And they're just neat birds. Welcome back, peafowl, to Ballyhoo. Zeke is good. We've been playing some indoor herding games. He loves it. I just put a ball between my feet. I turn and tell him the commands, and then if he goes the right direction, he gets the ball, and then we play it again. The cats are good. We had a scare widget used up a third life this week. Suddenly cold. It was one of those pop-up ice storms. And for 36 hours, he was missing. It turns out he was stuck under the house. A very cold kitty warmed up slowly. I was really worried we had lost him. But he's back and everything's fine. I'd love to give a shout out to the newest adjunct Ballyhooligan. This year, I'm also mentoring for the Farm Animal Concern Trust. They have a mentorship program, and I have a mentee. His name is Alex. He's in Vermont. If you are in Vermont and you want awesome biodynamically grown microgreens or farm fresh eggs, he has chickens and will be adding ducks. So a shout out to Gratitude Farms. Good people, really, really concerned with doing things right. What's good for their animals, what's good for the earth, what's good for people. Love to see them supported. Speaking of our Sebastopols, they're starting to come of age and attempt to mate. And I'm still not sure if we have two boys or two girls or one of each or what. I think they're one of each, but I think I was backwards about who's the boy and who's the girl. So I'm waiting to find an egg or to actually see them mate, like, successfully to figure it out. I know I should be able to sex by body shape, but with the curly feathers, it's so dang hard to tell. I guess we'll wait and see. I guess I should publicly announce that we lost Will in one of those freak hay bale accidents. It was when we were both down with the flu, throwing up and delirious with fever. And the poor little guy got himself wrapped up in the baling twine off the round bale and succumbed. So we are mourning his loss. Of course, of all the boys, it had to be him. We are looking forward to new babies on the farm starting in a month. I hope the snow and ice is done by then, and maybe there's some green things poking up from the ground. Lambing should last from mid-March through April. Basil and Akoya will have their first babies, respectively. Very excited to see what comes out. Hopefully a ewes. I would love a bunch of girls this year. I'm still working on Alex's Hanukkah socks, because I didn't take them with me. I have to say, though, I got a bunch of drop spindling done at that convention, because it was just 100% captive time. And then, you know, waiting for planes and such. I didn't want to have to keep count of things, and I was starting decrease rows for ankle shaping for these socks, so I left them at home. But I'm using that Hampshire wool from last year's shearing, and I really, really, really love it. I've got a bunch of it. I can dye it any color you want. It's available in the shop, ballyhoofiberemporium.com/shop. Go get you some. We will be shearing that flock again in, it looks like, a month or two, and would be thrilled to share more. So go gobble it up. Make your socks, make your ribbed sweaters, make your hats. It's very springy. You will love it, I promise. And it's something new that you probably haven't knitted with before. Comes naturally colored. Again, I can dye it for you, whatever color your heart desires. Next week, I am teaching a workshop. And I think I'm going to conduct it like a round table at the Eastern Kentucky Farmers Conference. BallyhooFiberEmporium.com, events and workshops, it's listed there. You can find more information. There's a link to their site if you need to register. The first weekend of March, I will be at the Organic Association of Kentucky's annual conference, not teaching, but exhibiting educational material about sheep and raising them biodynamically. Did you know, I found out this morning, not only does the Organic Certifying Board, not only do they accept completely hydroponically grown fruits and vegetables, so using no dirt whatsoever, how is that organic? They also allow the use of pesticides. Let that sink just for a second. I'm going to repeat it. To be certified organic, you can use pesticides. Maybe organic isn't as important a label as biodynamic. Biodynamic growers do not use pesticides ever. We do not use pesticides. We don't use herbicides. Know your farmer. Know where your food comes from. Know whence cometh your fiber as well. I'm not saying that organic is all bad. It's not. I believe in the principles, but that's why we're non-certified. classes, workshops, speakers, exhibitors, and also on Friday evening at 6:30, I believe, they will be showing a documentary called King Corn. Check that out. It's in Lexington. Again, events and workshops on our page. You can access the link to the organic conference. Sign up for that. There's still time. UK Shearing School is the 20th and 21st of March at the Sheep Station. Then the Tennessee State Shearing School is in April, and that's in Murfreesboro. And you can find information about that probably by Googling it. I don't have the specifics. We will be having our own shearing, weather permitting, the last weekend of April here on the farm. And you can watch. In fact, you might even be able to help. You can feed the sheep, console them when they lose all that fabulous wool. You can help skirt fleeces. Try and let us know if you're going to come to that so that I know how much food to have for lunch. I will be picking up roving and more yarn from the mill this week. More Hampshire and our own fleeces. We haven't had roving in stock for a while, so I know a lot of you are pretty excited about that. And I'll get it up on the website as soon as I possibly can. All right, I'm going to let you go. Watch the Olympics. Go for gold. Have a great week. And remember, spin everywhere.